Hey there, everybody. It is Thursday, April 4th, 2013, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us an email. Send it on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little radio show that could. As of last week, you can now go to Twitter. We now have our Twitter account, so if you're on Twitter, we want you following us because, you know, the number of followers you have is directly proportional to your self-worth. So follow us, and it'll make us feel better. And, of course, go to the Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay. Like us, because we sure as heck like you. A bit of a theme show for you this week. A bit of a theme show. We're talking all about coming out. So a lot of our guests are, and including Jody later on in the show, we're going to be telling some coming out stories. So we want to get started with our first guest, Paul V. Vitagliano. He put together a photo essay blog called Born This Way, which quickly turned into an internet phenomenon with millions and millions of hits. Paul then turned that blog into a book called Born This Way, Real Stories of Growing Up Gay, which features over 100 photos and stories of growing up gay experiences from all over the world, including some very darn notable folks. And now he's here to talk with us about that project. Paul, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Hello there, Ken. Thanks for having me.
How the heck are you?
I'm great. It's the beginning of spring, and that makes me happy.
Look at that. It's like a metaphor for coming out.
That's right. The sun is shining on the homos who are out of the closet.
I love it. All right. Well, let's start with, I would assume that we start with the blog, right? That's where this all really came from?
Yeah, the blog launched in January 2011, and it really was just the simplest of ideas. It was, let's find some gay people to find their childhood photos and to send in a couple of paragraphs describing their growing up gay memories and experiences and so on. And I've always said this, that the first, you know, 25 or so that are on there are just my Facebook friends, because I launched it. And you know how it is. Anything online, whether it's a blog or a website, needs content.
Yeah.
I was really just begging my friends, like, hey, I just started this. I think it's a cool idea. If any of you have, you know, want to send in your stuff, please do. And they did. And really within like 2 weeks, it was one of those things that everybody wanted to share on Facebook.
Yeah.
And it just spread incredibly. And it got written up on, you know, on some other big gay news blogs, et cetera. And then more mainstream places like ABC News and CNN and Sundance Channel, et cetera. And it really caught me by surprise. I knew it was an interesting idea, and it was an idea that hadn't really been done, and so I felt it was an important idea, but I didn't know that it was going to touch people the way that it did.
What do you think happened there? Because, Paul, it was inescapable. You know, everybody was talking about it, and folks still post links to it all the time. What do you think you hit on there?
I think what really struck people was this connection of realizing that, well, for one, when you're a gay kid and you're growing up, and especially the previous generations, let's say in the 60, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s even, we all have a secret. We all internally carry something. We don't really know what it is, yet we've all been sort of pegged. You
right.
know, our classmates and our peers generally can zoom in on us, even though we don't know that we're gay. They seem to know right away, something's different about this kid, and I'm going to either pick on this kid or bully this kid or make fun of this kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of us don't really talk about our childhoods. Even if they were good, I still think, you know, for instance, I'm a child of the late 60s and the 70s, and my generation, we weren't given positive imagery or ideas of what a gay person was. It was generally all negative or shameful or
right.
a joke.
Right.
And I still think a lot of us carry that. And
yeah.
so I think many of us who escaped our small towns or, you know, forged lives as gay adults, we tend to tamp down what we went through as kids because a lot of it wasn't that pleasant. So I think what the blog did was it just resonated with people who went through such similar experiences and had similar memories. And, you know, my goal was that for the gay kids going through it all now would say, be able to read it and feel connected and say, wow, all these other people came before me and they've got great partners now, or their careers are fabulous and they're happy. That really was, I hope, the message, which might come off in some of the photos more than anything, is look how happy these kids are.
Right. Now, some of the feedback with the pictures, the pictures were cracking people up of like, you looked at a picture and some folks would write, okay, you clearly were born gay. And it became kind of campy and fun, which I actually appreciated as an access point to talk about being born gay.
Yeah, at first, you know, when I said about my Facebook friends, and a misconception about what I was looking for was, Oh, this blog wants you to find the gayest photo.
Right.
Oh, I have one of those.
Right.
So inevitably, I was getting the hand on the hip, the leg kicked in the air, and the sort of for the gay boys, really flamboyant photos. And I think it's just even within a month or so, it became clear that it really wasn't
exactly
find your gayest photo. It was tell your compelling story.
Yeah.
And I actually love that we can laugh a little bit at ourselves, because, and again, it comes back to the happiness. If the happiness and the energy and the joy is showing in the photo, whether it's a class photo or a pose photo, that's what I want. I want the essence of the person to really shine through in the photo. I think we all react and love seeing retro photos, whether it's the fashion or the haircuts or it's the time, I guess the time capsule element of the photos, I think really people responded to that as well.
Yeah. Now, at some point you said, okay, we have this blog. Everybody is going to this blog. We should turn this into a book.
Well, the original concept way back, like almost 4 years ago now, was a coffee table book.
Mm.
It really was. I would love to have a book that kind of proves all the naysayers wrong, that being gay is a choice, because it's not a choice. So to just have the photographic evidence and a short, you know, write-up, like this is my story. I knew I was gay when I was very young. I'm telling you in black and white, it was not a choice. You know, who are you going to believe? Your homophobic preacher or the person themselves? So that was sort of the idea.
Well, and I have to read what you wrote. This is at the very start of the book. I started the Born This Way project to show young gay kids that they're not alone. Many others have gone through everything they're experiencing now. We must share our stories and pay it forward for future generations. Being gay is as normal and natural as being straight. It's not a choice or a phrase. It's not something you learn. And it's certainly not something that can or should be cured or fixed. That was good stuff, Paul.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's funny because most of the feedback I've gotten through emails and comments are from parents.
Yeah.
And they've all generally been supportive. And I remember I was playing Dr. Phil for a few months because I was getting parents asking, like, I think my 7-year-old Johnny might be gay. He wants to sew and he doesn't like sports and he's sensitive. What do I do? And it's the simplest of message for the parents, which is support and love all your children.
Yeah.
If you have a child who either tells you or you suspect might be gay, you need to find out what makes them happy and then just encourage that and nurture that and don't put any right or wrong on it. In other words, if your son would rather play with dolls and paint instead of playing sports, then tell your son, I support your art and you don't have to play sports. If your daughter is not into wearing frilly dresses and would rather wear, you know, overalls and wants to have her hair cut short, support that.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And I think that's what we, of the older generation, it wasn't that our parents punished us, but they could only go on what society told them a boy is supposed to be and a girl is supposed to be. And so a lot of times we were forced to dress a certain way that didn't really fit how we felt. Or I know a lot of boys were like, you're going to play football if it's the last thing you know. the dads that wanted their sons to be sports kids. So I guess the larger point is that it's all correct. Whatever your child wants to do and be is what you need to nurture.
And you, as I mentioned in the intro, you got some pretty darn notable folks to contribute to the book.
Yes, and again, going back to the original concept, the very original concept was a book that would just be, you know, famous gays or gays in the public eye. Because I think what comes with seeing these people is that it gives aspiration to the kids, the gay kids of today. You know, that they can look at someone like Ellen DeGeneres and see that she was just, you know, a confused girl or as a little kid, or, you know, Greg Louganis or Neil Patrick Harris. I mean, the list goes on and on of people that are out. And I think when you see that there's a lot of people that are in the public eye that are brave enough to be truthful and be out, that lends even more power to the idea of, you know, be proud of yourself.
Yeah.
And don't be ashamed and to come out when you can.
Well, we wanted to read, you've got an entry, I've got an entry, because we want to give people a sense of the book, but they need to go pick up the book. That's what we want them to do, and we're going to talk about how they do that in a few. But I wanted to read one. This was my favorite one. I have to tell you, it's quite a visually stunning book too, so it really has that coffee table appeal to it, which I really appreciate in a book that puts out such great content. And this one is by Seth. And it's Seth at age 10. And again, you know, there's an element where folks are, you got to see it because you got to see the accompanying image because it really gives you that beautiful visual. But Seth writes about this picture, and I don't even know how I would describe this picture except he's in shorts and boots and kind of a fur coat. And he writes, "This was a weekend game night at my mom's house. I was always trying to entertain my family with my best supermodel pose way before the age of supermodels. The terry cloth hot pants still kill me. They were my everyday shorts. All the other clothing was my mom's. I also remember that this was the first time my older brother, who I idolized, called me a fag. The harshest part of being called names like that was knowing they were right. I couldn't prove them wrong, and it really created a sense of doom inside me. That feeling lasted until I got out of Virginia at age 18 and began to live my life." I love that. I love that arc.
Yeah.
That's a great arc.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you have one too. Which one are you going to read?
I'm going to read someone who's sort of become a friend of mine, and he's sort of well known. I'll tell you who he is after. How's
oh, good.
That?
I love that. Good idea.
And that's why we actually kept everybody in the book. You know, you only see a first name and where they grew up. You don't see a last name. It's really just about this is this person as a kid.
Yeah.
I'll read you. It's Frank. He was 7 years old. It's from 1969, and he grew up in Little Falls, New Jersey. And Frank writes, "As a kid, I dressed like Charles Nelson Reilly. I had posters of David Cassidy on my wall. And I owned my own food processor by the time I was 15. My father, God love him, tried his best to interest me in pursuits more traditionally masculine than shopping and reading Red Book. My classmates certainly knew I was gay. I was called a fag every day from the sixth grade on. I was a quadruple whammy teasing target, too. I wasn't just effeminate. I was a fat, four-eyed, straight-A student whom teachers adored. The worst experience was an art class. I made a giant psychedelic letter F out of cardboard and temper paint. It was just like the M on the wall of the Mary Tyler Moore Show. My teacher held it up in class, and one kid shouted, 'What's the F for, faggot?' The class howled. I was devastated, and worst of all, I did nothing. I wasn't yet ready to admit I was gay. I finally came out right before my 17th birthday, beginning a relationship with a boy in my geometry class. From our first mall date, I was ready to sign the bridal registry. And oh, what a sexy summer we shared before going off to college. I'm proud to say that we still send each other birthday cards to this day. Today, my husband and I are nearing the 16-year mark of being together. And no matter the awful things my mother said when I first came out to her, and there were some doozies, she left me with some good advice. She said, 'Nobody is better than you, and you're no better than anybody else.' Those are some pretty fabulous words to live by, whether you're gay or not." And in his photo, it's actually, interestingly, an Easter photo There's a giant bunny on the wall and a big Easter basket, and he's eating a ham sandwich. Frank turned out to be Frank DeCaro, who is a very funny comedian, and he hosts his own show on Sirius.
Ugh, love Frank DeCaro. Why did that one speak to you?
Well, we're around the same age. In fact, we're the exact same age. You know, he mentions Charles Nelson Reilly. And I remember thinking back to when I was a kid, like watching TV, you know, I was a TV addict of the 70s, and I remember instinctively seeing Charles Nelson Reilly and Paul Lynde and just somehow connecting to them and knowing, like, I think they're like me or I'm like them. But that also scared me a little because they were sort of flamboyant and not the butt of the joke, but I was like, I don't know if that's really me, but is that me? You know, it was one of those things where, again, the confusion, like, what am I? You know, who am I? But somehow I connected, you know, to those two people.
Yeah.
And the mention of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, you know, I love that show. And I remember the giant M on the wall, just like Frank did. And that feeling of, you know, he was trying to be creative. He made the giant F for his name. And immediately the bully in the class, you know, said, what's that for, faggot? And, I'm sure that's a fairly common situation that a lot of gay kids have felt. And that sinking feeling, you know, it's a terrible feeling.
Yeah. Oh, look, it's the visuals of the books of the book. It's the text that goes along with it. I really, what a beautiful combination for folks to thumb through. How can folks get their hands on it, though?
It's really available every place. It's in all your large bookstores like, you know, Barnes & Noble, and it's online everywhere. Of course, it's on Amazon. It's a Kindle. There's a Kindle version. There's lots of other digital versions, too. You know, I always say if you've got a local independent bookstore or an independent LGBT bookstore, please go there first and support them if you can.
Yeah.
If you don't, you know, get it online. If you always need to get more info, you can go to BornThisWayBlog.com, and at the very top you'll see Born This Way Book, and click on that, and that has pretty much a link to every place you can find the book.
Well, this is one of those, you know, we're always looking for – we've actually talked about this previously on the show, the idea that when you come out, there should be some sort of gift that everybody gets. And I feel like this is one of those gifts that everybody who comes out should get. But it's great for parents and anybody. I'm so struck by that combination again of the images with the narrative and how it really can strike a chord in anybody who reads it.
Thanks. I really feel like I want this book read by everybody. Obviously, for gay people, there's a special connection that we'll make immediately. But like I said, I want parents to, you know, if they, let's say they have a preteen who they might think might be gay. Imagine if this great parent just said, you know, here's something I think you might really appreciate.
Yeah.
So it's yours, you know, read it when you want. And if you ever want to talk to me about what you read or how you feel, you know, I'm here for you.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that happen. I'd love to see the book be in all school libraries so that if it's hard for a kid who might be gay to express what they're going through or talk about it, that they can at least read the book or take the book home and, again, feel that connection.
Nice. Nice. And what about you, sir? Do you have any DJ gigs coming up that we should know about? Because for folks who don't know, you're quite the DJ.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, that's actually my career. I've been a club and events DJ for 30 years now, and I'm still doing it. I still love it. I have a new Thursday night club that I just launched called Mash Appeal.
Nice.
Which is in North Hollywood, and it's a night of it's basically the soundtrack of your life remixed and mashed up.
Awesome.
I'm doing a new event on April 12th at a place called the Virgil here in my neighborhood in Silver Lake, and that's called Pleasure Dome. And we're going to have you ever seen Drew Drogi as Chloe Sevigny?
I have, yes.
she is going to host the event. And we have a really great LA electropop duo called Father Tiger who are going to do a short set as well. And I still love playing music for people. It's really my passion.
And I'll be there during LA Pride. Will I get to see you somewhere? Will you be playing somewhere for LA Pride?
You know, it's interesting. I actually sent in, you have to apply as a DJ, you have to send in an application, which I did. The odd thing is, like, I don't generally go to the LA Gay Pride just because I live in Silver Lake, which is east, and West Hollywood is west, and I tend to stay in my cocoon of my neighborhood here.
Nice.
But I might go, and obviously if I get booked to DJ, then I'll definitely be there. You'll have to just look for my name on the roster, I guess.
Will do. We will certainly check that out. Well, again, on behalf of the whole community, but again, let's make it clear, this is a book that everybody should be getting, not just the LGBT community, but certainly as a member of the LGBT community, it really strikes a chord, and just so appreciative that you took the time to put it together and to give people that access point to either have a conversation, or even if they don't have a conversation, it gives them an access point to have a point of resonance for them, which is something that we always need. We always need that opportunity to say, you know what, let me reflect back on my own experience, and then all the better if they can take that and turn it into a dialogue with somebody else.
That's exactly right. I want the topic to be completely normalized.
Yes.
In other words, if a kid now wants to bring up to their parents, even as young as age 7 or 8 or 9, mom, dad, I think I might be gay, that it's not a freak out and it's not a negative. It's just a fact. You know, being gay is just a fact of life. It's like being left-handed or having blue eyes. It simply is just a fact, and it should be treated as such.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, Paul, thanks for putting this together.
Thank you so much, Ken. I really appreciate you having me on, and I'd love everybody to check the book out.
Sounds good, and we will link right to it, folks. Go check out the book, available wherever fine books are sold. Paul, thank you for being on this show. It's So Gay.
Thanks, Ken. Take care.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, our next guest talking more about coming out, we have the coming out coach for you. Rick Clements is a certified professional coach, a professional speaker, an LGBT advocate, a thought-provoking blogger. He is the creator of the Gay Man's Manifesto, Creating Courageous Confidence, The Art of Coming Out, and his signature coaching system. I need a signature coaching system, Rick. But his is called Coming Out Without Coming Unglued. He's been on the Ricky Lake Show and a ton of other media. He's got his own show, The Coming Out Lounge, but now he's on our show. Hey, Rick, welcome to this show, It's So Gay.
Hey, thanks, and I'm so glad to be here. I'm so glad we connected, and I've been looking forward to this show and seeing what we can stir up and how we can help some other people as they're either coming out, just come out, or considering all those possibilities. So thanks so much, Ken.
Well, how could we have a show on coming out without the coming out coach? What brings you to this work, sir?
Well, I had always been very fascinated with the whole coaching industry. In fact, my first entree into it was in 1996 when I hired an executive coach for my company and liked what she was doing and just kind of kept watching what she did, and I had just been hired, so I'm like, well, no, I don't want to change careers yet. Then I did a jump out of that industry and went to another industry and had thought about going on to be a coach, but again, I just got hired by that company, and I thought, no, you're here, help them grow. So I helped them grow, and then I got laid off once again. I said, okay, I'm done working for other people. And that's when I actually started my own marketing and branding company, which was what my background was. And ironically, I started doing a lot of marketing and branding for coaches, and the more I did it, the more I decided I really liked this. And of course, in the midst of all this, I was coming out of the closet myself. So I found my niche really quickly. I wanted to help people come out of the closet and do it in a way that was healthy and very self-supporting, building their confidence and helping them navigate all those little roads. And lo and behold, 2 years ago, I got certified as a professional coach and launched my business even bigger, larger, and all that stuff. And now here I am talking on the radio with you.
Look at that. It all brings you to this point.
Yes, to your show.
the culmination of so many careers. It's all downhill from here, but we'll have fun while we're on the air, Rick.
Absolutely, I agree. It is all downhill from here, especially when you have less hair on your head than you did when you were a child.
Well, we'll talk about the coming out piece in one second. What makes generally for a good coach?
My personal opinion is someone who really knows how to listen and listen intuitively. I do all my coaching predominantly over the phone. So obviously that puts a certain barrier, but when you can hear and listen in to what someone's speaking to, it's amazing what you can uncover. So I think being a good listener, being empathetic, not trying to fix, and for sure realizing that each person that you work with really has a lot of their own answers, all you're doing is helping them excavate them out and get them out in the open.
Nice. Well, let's talk about your process. And you are quite open just about your coming out experience, but all of our listeners may not have heard it. It's almost like at this point, Rick, we have to remind people that when we're talking about coming out, we're actually not just talking about teenagers. We're not just talking about youth and students, but that people do come out at all ages. It's not passé to talk about that there are any number of folks who are not ready to come out and who come out later in life.
Yeah, it is not passé. And quite honestly, it's ironic that you bring that up, because in the past 2 weeks, I have had interactions with a man who is 63 years old who is wanting to come out as transgender. I have a client who's in his late 50s who just came out to his wife after a 23-year marriage.
Wow.
So there are people out there coming out at all ages all around us. And I think that's where sometimes we miss the whole, what does gay really look like? Gay can be many shades of gray, so don't ever forget it.
Love it. Love it. Give me some baselines, things that people need to think about before they come out.
Well, I think honestly what it means to you. What does you being gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, what does that mean to you? And what will going through that closet door signify to you? This to me is one of the pieces of where I usually start with every one of my clients is, okay, screw everybody else just for a moment. I know that's hard to do because there are going to be lives. Every life is going to get touched in some way, shape, or form. But for the moment, what does it mean to you to be gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and what will it look like for you on the other side? Because until you're completely solid, or as solid as you can be in those two thoughts, it's going to be really hard to expect others to get where you are.
Yeah.
The second thing I really put forward is patience is a gift, whether you're the one coming out or you're surrounded by people who are watching you come out. It's a two-way street. And as much as we want people to be patient with us and celebrate our coming out and be joyful, happy, all that stuff that we seem to want to do, we also have to realize we need to give some patience back. We've been on this journey, many of us, all of our lives, just didn't realize when it was going to hit. We've been working towards this. Those around us, they haven't. So those two things are my biggies that I usually start with most of my clients, patience, right, and then really realizing what it means for you to be who you are.
Now, what do we say to the rest of the LGBT community, those members of the community who are saying, oh, come on, this is ridiculous. Nobody should be in the closet at this point. Come out wherever you are. Especially the tolerance level seems to be disproportionate to someone's age. The tolerance goes down the older the person in question gets, that, okay, we can forgive a youth for not coming out because they might be financially and emotionally dependent. But if you're in your 40s, it's time to come out. What do we say to those folks?
I say until you've walked in their shoes, you don't know the pain they've been in.
Yeah.
I mean, for 38 years, I was in pain. And my story is a little bit, I'm not going to call it unique. My story is different, just like everybody's story is different. But I came out when I was 19. And then I got lovingly pushed back in the closet, and I actually now can really say I appreciate that, because I came out that first time right at the beginning of the AIDS epidemic, and I probably wouldn't be talking with you right now, Ken, if I'd come out. I think I honestly would have just kind of jumped in being a rebellious youth, and, you know, who knows where I would have gone. But my gut tells me that's probably what would have happened.
Right.
But until we walk in someone else's shoes, and until we know why they held back, and what else was going on for them in their lives and where they were living. And I mean, even in this day and age, we still have parts of our country, the United States, where it's not even safe to say I'm gay or lesbian. So whether you're a teen or you're 30 or 40 or 50, we have to remember there are still areas of our country that this can be some pretty painful places to come out of the closet.
Yeah. Because we want to be clear with folks. They don't make an appointment with you and you say, all right, come out tomorrow.
This is a journey. And I've had clients who've done it in as little as 2 months. I've had clients who've taken a year of them coming to a space where they feel really comfortable. And there is no magic number, just like there is no gay handbook. It
right.
happens for each of us in our own way, in our own time. And that's one of the things I always encourage my clients to realize is this is your journey. You have every right to do it your way, on your time schedule, and in the way that's best for you, for your life.
Nice. Nice. Now, what does coming unglued look like? What do we want to avoid?
I think it's different for everybody, but sometimes coming unglued could be going right back in the closet. You
yeah.
become so petrified of what's on the other side that you just go back in and retreat. Coming unglued could be you burst out of that closet door and you basically do say, screw everybody else, I'm living my life, and off you go. And then before you know it, you become so belligerent in your approach to being out that nobody wants to be with you. Another common way I see people come unglued, especially those who've been married.
Yeah.
It's like their second childhood almost. You know, it's like we didn't know how to do this in high school, and now here we are, we're coming out the door, and it's like we've started all over again. And so they come unglued and they go and they try to fit right into whatever the gay lifestyle is that they say they think they need to identify with. And before you know it, they're the kid in the candy store, they're trying to fit into this gay group, whether it's the, you know, Bears or the Twinks or the, you know, Daddies, or, and suddenly they've just lost themselves.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of ways to come unglued.
And one of the reasons I love your website, and folks can stroll on over to thecomingoutcoach.com, is that you are putting out information not just to the LGBT community, but also to individuals whose spouse may have just come out of the closet, whose parents may have just come out of the closet. And my favorite part, as always, parents, as we were talking about in our previous segment, parents who think that their child might be gay.
I feel like it's a 360-degree approach, and I guess because I lived it and I continue to live it, you know, I'm a father, I have two kids, I have two teenage daughters, I have an ex-wife that I have a really powerful relationship with, I'm in a loving relationship with a partner who I've been with for 12 years, I have parents who, you know, haven't always agreed that, you know, ironically, my mother probably texts and talks to my partner more than she does me now.
Isn't so. That always the way?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's kind of ironic. And, you know, when I first thought about being the coming out coach and what that looked like, it was, I'm just going to work with married people who are coming out. I thought, well, that's a little bit short-sighted. And so then I started working with others, and then I'm like, well, you know what? It's a 360-degree approach. And the moment that I had the thought of, when we walk through that closet door, we take a whole collective of people with us. That's when I really started getting really focused on, yeah, I may be the gay man who came out, who was married, but I can work with the parent who's struggling. I can work with the spouse who's struggling.
Yeah.
I can work with any one of these people. And that's where I get, you know, I really feel the most joy.
Love
it. I can really help a whole collective go through this process in a way where everyone's voice gets heard. I think sometimes we miss that piece when we're the one coming out of the closet. We don't allow everyone else's voice to be heard as well. Doesn't mean we have to agree with what they're saying. Doesn't mean they have to agree with what we are. But we each should, as a human being, be allowed to have our voice heard.
Yeah. And not that we are in the business of providing people incentives, but let's just put it out there. For someone who wants to come out, does that then increase their chances of meeting Ricky Lake?
I don't know about that. That was done on a whim.
Come on.
I'm serious. A coach friend of mine had said, hey, and this was when she was launching the new show, said, hey, they're doing like these really cool video auditions. You send a video in, and then if they like it, then you go on to Ustream, and they'll play your video, and you'll get to see them in their production meeting. And I'm like, that's not me. That's not how I want to do it. And then I knew she had done it, and we're like the night before the one that my friend had sent one in for, and I'm like, oh, what the heck? I literally sat down in my home office, recorded a 1-minute video, said, hey, I think it'd be really cool given where we are in society to have a show about what it looks like when, you know, someone comes out as a late bloomer and then makes it work and da 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 da. And that's actually how that whole thing came about.
Look
and
at
it
that.
Was on a whim, and there you have it. And I think the home run was I'm watching the Ustream thing the next day because I try not to work past 8 o'clock at night if I can. And I was going to bed and I thought, I'll just go check email. Well, I'm glad I did because the producers had sent we need you to sign this agreement. We're going to use your video tomorrow in the pitch meeting, yada, yada, yada. So then I'm watching the next day and the whole room got really quiet as soon as my video got done. And I thought, okay, that was definitely not a home run. And one of the senior producers starts laughing. And I thought, okay, that's strike two. Laughing at my video.
Not what you were going for, yes.
Not what I was going for. And then this senior producer said, well, I guess if we decide to do that show, it will be about my life as well. And that was like, oh, my God, I did hit a home run because that producer had actually lived the same exact sort of experience that I had. And literally from there, it was about 6-8 weeks of starting to talk to them, and off we went. And there we sat, and I was on the Ricky Lake couch on national TV and coming out. And that was ironic because after they ran the show the second time and I heard about it, running the second time, I was in Atlanta, and I didn't get to see it, but I came home and I watched the second show because I did an update for them. And I was actually more petrified watching the second show because it finally really hit me that, oh my God, I actually came out on national TV.
Look,
the first go around, it didn't faze me, you know, none of it, I was totally in it, but it was that second time that I'm like, okay, now anybody, whoever maybe runs into me will now know, but I'm like, okay, that's what I was destined to put on the third floor.
Yeah. I just think you have all these different scenarios on your website. I'm gay and keeping it a secret. I'm ready to come out, need a plan. I just feel like one of them should be, I'm not ready to come out, but I want to meet Ricky Lake.
Yeah.
And then you can help them navigate that.
Yeah, exactly. Except, you know what? Unfortunately, her show is going off the air, so.
Yeah, it didn't do very well. It didn't do, but it's not your fault, Rick. You can't take that on.
No, I can't. I won't hold myself accountable. And, you know, luckily I'm good friends. I've become good friends with all the producers. So maybe that says something.
There you go.
There
you go. And how do I go about getting a signature coaching system? I don't have one. I need one.
Well, you just got to think through it. It's like, okay, what do people need? And you know, it's funny that you bring that up, Ken, because that system is actually the same system I use whether I'm working with someone coming out, whether it's a parent who thinks their child's coming out, whether it's I'm probably going to really hurt myself now in the gay community. I have a handful of straight clients. I'm helping them through some stuff that they're going through.
All right.
But it's exactly the same process.
We can edit that part out, Rick.
Yeah. Okay, well. That'll probably give me more clients than.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Especially straight women. For some reason, straight women really like working with me. I don't know whether they think they're going to wave a magic wand and convert me back or something, but I don't know. It's interesting. I always get a good following of straight women that have some reason they want to work with me who like them.
Yeah, you're going to have to change the name of the Coming Out Lounge if that magic wand works.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, maybe, you know, Sex in the City Lounge or something. That's what it would end up being. So,
and what about hosting your own show? Do you enjoy doing the hosting gig?
I do. I really do. And we're kind of in transition right now about whether it's going to stay a radio show or just become straight podcast. But I love it. I've had such great experiences. I've met some really cool people.
Yeah.
I've put some interesting, controversial topics on the air. It's a lot of fun, and you always learn. I mean, whether you're in
always.
A coaching session or when you're on the air doing radio, I just did a radio show a couple of weeks ago in L.A., and it was just ironic because the producer's kind of watching. He's like the second producer. I stirred up something in, I guess, and before I knew it, this producer is now a client of mine.
Look how powerful. You're merging all of your different pursuits. It's a little bit scary, but I love it.
And I love that you guys do this show, too. I just love this whole concept because I think to get it out in as many markets as you guys do, it's powerful. And you're right. We are in such a transition in our world right now, and the energy is shifting. And I've always said, and my first few clients have always kind of looked at me weird when I said this, but I said, I really truly do look forward to the day that I will not have to be a coming out coach.
Yeah.
That there'll be no need for it.
Yeah.
You know, that would be the epitome of me having been able to live my life to its fullest, is to know that I didn't have to pick up the phone because someone felt like they had to have that service.
Right. We'll get there.
Of course, then we'll get there.
Now, where can folks go? Tell everyone where to go to get in touch with you to learn more about all the cool things that you're doing.
Well, the best place to go is the Coming Out Coach. The Coming Out Coach. Don't go just to Coming Out Coach. Somebody else has that domain and they just sit there waiting.
It's probably that client who didn't show up tonight.
Right, exactly. But it's thecomingoutcoach.com. That's the very best place. You can find me on Facebook as the Coming Out Coach. You can find me on Twitter as the Coming Out Coach. But my home base is the Coming Out Coach, and that's the best place to connect up with me.
Nice.
Or you can also go to lifecoachrick.com, but that's a little bit different genre over there. It's mostly for just gay men who are trying to find their path, but the Coming Out Coach is me. So
love it. Look, I feel like sometimes we've been doing this show for so many years, and sometimes we just blow by the whole coming out piece and just talk about our stories and have our gay guests on and just ignore the fact that there was actually a process that led to all of our guests and all of our content and even this host and our co-host in coming out of the closet. And so we really wanted a pause for this week and say, you know what? There is a process that happens, and it involves a ton of people, and it is about self-affirmation, and you do such a great job at just supporting people through that process, and we're so appreciative.
Well, thank you. And, you know, it never stops. That's
yeah.
the thing. You know, it never stops. Whether, and that's why I've branched and, you know, done the life coaching piece as another side part of the business, because we always are coming out of something. You know, I come out every year, every school year, I come out of the closet. You know,
yeah.
every year my kids go and, you know, I've got one heading off to college this year, and I've got another one starting high school. I will never stop coming out as long as I live.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Rick, what a pleasure having you on.
Same here. Thanks so much, Ken. It's been great. I'd love to come back, be on the show, promote you guys, whatever you need done, just let me know.
Please keep doing what you're doing, sir.
Thank you.
All right, folks, and we are back. Hi, Jody.
Hi, Ken.
Well, the theme of the show is coming out stories, which is
yeah.
kind of fun. So
that is fun.
I do have some really cool gay news that I want to hit briefly, but I thought we could tell some coming out stories.
Okay.
Because it's usually just you and I reflecting on the news, and
yeah.
people don't feel like they know our psychological history and the therapy that we've both been through to deal with the trauma of coming. I don't know. Not at all.
No.
So
no,
you want to trade coming out stories? Anything
yeah.
like if you have one and then I'll do one and you
okay.
might have another?
Yeah, sure.
Which one do you want to tell?
Well, I could tell like the first one, the big one.
Ooh, the big one.
The big one.
Go
yeah.
for it. Go
yeah.
for it.
Yeah. So that was back in 1995, although it was kind of a process that started in 94.
I was only 4 years old.
Wow.
No, that's not true. Go ahead. Okay, 1995.
Yeah. yeah. So I was a student at this esteemed institution where we work.
Marlboro College.
Marl-
Please apply. We need you.
Yes. And I was in my senior year.
Okay.
And that's not a good time to come out.
No.
It's not. It's very stressful. And at Marlboro, you are giving birth to a big academic baby at that time. And so it's a really bad time to also have an identity crisis.
Right.
But that's when it chose to occur. So I was having a lot of weird interpersonal stuff with a friend of mine, sort of friend,
okay.
Friend-ish friend. And I'd been thinking a little bit about what that might be about, but I wasn't sure.
Was this a female friend?
It was a female friend.
Okay.
Female friend. But
that
I.
That adds complexity to
it
the
does.
Story.
Yes. Yes, indeed. But I was, no, that's surely not. No. And it's not that Marlboro was intolerant by any means.
No.
At all. It's a very open place, but I had a lot of fear about what that might mean for
mm-hmm.
me and what was going to change. And I was just afraid of this whole, everything I knew about myself, I don't know anymore. So it was all this internal stuff. It wasn't anyone putting any pressure on me. In fact, nobody said, hey, Jody, you should be coming out of the closet, by the way. Like, there wasn't any of that kind of stuff. It was all me. And so I went to London in January of 95 and had a lot of good conversations with one of my very good friends, Rob Schaefer, who was instrumental in helping me through this process. He had already come out for and was sort of the one of the few out gay men on campus and was a really just grounding person for me. I think without him, I would not have made it out on the other side.
You would not be on this show with So Gay.
No.
Thank you, Rob.
No. Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah. Yeah. Backtracking a little bit, the moment I really realized that this was a probable thing was actually in October, but I had shut it down until January when I started having these conversations with Rob. I was passing by a movie night in a common room, and since it's Halloween time, the film that was being shown is the ever classic The Hunger.
Oh, God.
With Catherine Deneuve and Susan Sarandon.
Is there a lesbians coming out story that doesn't involve The Hunger? I don't know. Okay, go ahead.
Of a certain generation. It definitely dates me, you know. And I think that's sort of the end of that generation of lesbians who had that as part of their coming out. I don't know. I'd be curious if there are some younger lesbians who also were like, oh, yes, that moment when they did that thing. Oh, yes.
The younger generations, it's more like, well, yes, I was watching The Hunger Games.
Games. And so-and-so was so hot. Yeah. So it was The Hunger. I popped into this common room and sat down to watch this movie because I was bored. And it's not a great movie. It's a terrible, terrible movie. But there was nothing else to do and I'm watching it. And then the scene, the scene, that seduction scene and the opera music, the Léo Delibes, Lacmé, flower duet, which I became obsessed with after the movie, the diaphanous material flowing, the dropping of the sherry, yes. And that was the moment I'm like, oh my God, whoa. And I had to ponder on that and everything that might mean for the next several months. And then it was in January when I started having conversations with Rob. And then there was the complications with this, friend, is it a friend? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And
now you're married.
And now I'm married to not the friend.
Oh, okay, just checking.
No, not the friend. No, that actually ended up being really bad.
Yeah.
The friend turned into awkward, bad, unrelationship. It was actually very emotionally draining and a little traumatizing too. There was a lot of just, I was very vulnerable and she was also vulnerable in a different way. Mm. I think she was just in a very troubled space. And the two of us together, it was very bad. And we had an unrelationship that was emotionally icky on all sides.
Yeah. But I think that also, that story also highlights, and the more liberal the colleges, I feel like the less they do in some ways to support students coming out, because it's just assumed, well, if you come out, you're coming out into this really accepting place. And it kind of negates the fact that just because you go to a very liberal college, very LGBT-friendly college, does not mean that you have LGBT-friendly parents. Or that you have support systems or that, you know, so I think it really speaks to that where there's some students who struggle even more coming out at a school that has an LGBT office.
Yeah. And actually, I would say I had no idea where to turn. If I didn't have Rob, I would have been
Rob Schaefer. Dedicating this show to Rob Schaefer.
Definitely.
All right.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think there was sort of this assumption that, well, yeah, everything's cool.
Right.
It's all fine. And my fears around it were again all internal, and when I finally did tell people in very, very timid ways, folks were like, "That's so great.
Look at that.
We're so happy for you.
I'm so happy for you too."
Yeah, and it was wonderful. And my parents were wonderful. Nice. I was terrified what they were going to say, and they were both wonderful about it. In fact, I feel so blessed that there was nobody who went, oh, I will not be speaking to you, or oh, you're bad, evil, wrong. Like, nobody did that. Again, very, very fortunate, very blessed in that.
Love that coming out story.
Yeah. So what's yours?
Have I ever told you about me and my family in the car?
No.
You've never heard this?
No, I haven't.
All right. So, I mean, I grew up in New Jersey, and there's that whole CAS model. Have you seen the Vivian CAS model of a positive identity development for gay people?
No,
I'll send
it
to you. It's great.
Okay.
One of the phases there is encountering, and it's this idea that you can really start wrapping your mind around being gay when you encounter other gay people,
uh-huh.
be it in real life or in The Hunger.
Yeah.
And no, but that is the thing. I mean, when you actually see, because when you and I grew up, the representations of gay people in the media were not plentiful.
No, they're pretty limited.
Yeah. And so I always go back to Norm on the first season of The Real World of New York. It was such a big deal.
Right. No, that is true.
And Pedro and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
But I went to NYU and there were gay people in there at both NYU and in New York City. So
yes.
I'm that part, you know, of me figuring out who I was and I'd always known. I mean, I had known since I was 12, 13 years old. But telling my family was a much different thing. And so my two sisters and my brother, we were all living in New York City and we were going home for the Jewish high holiday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it was Yom Kippur because there was an atonement thing going on, though that could have been anything for my family. And we were driving from New York City to my parents' house, which about a 35-minute drive from New York City. And we were about 10 minutes from my parents' house, and my oldest sister was dating someone very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all pestering her, are you going to get married? Are you going to get married?
Mm.
And I'm the youngest, and I was sitting in the back, and I must have said something like, yeah, are you? And my voice, some sort of Peter Brady crack. Was that Peter whose voice cracked? Yes.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Some sort of, well, are you? And
yeah.
So they all stopped talking and turned to me. And my sister said, well, if I tell you all if I'm going to get married to this guy, or will you tell us something to me? And I figured, okay, I know what they're going to ask. They're going to ask me if I'm gay. And I had made the decision at that point. There's a commonality of folks that sometimes it's not so much coming out, but making the decision not to lie anymore.
Sure.
And that's most certainly what it was for me at that point.
Yeah.
And so I decided I wasn't going to lie anymore. But I also knew at that point we were about, I would say, less than 5 minutes from my parents' house
mm-hmm.
on the Garden State Parkway. So
yeah.
I trusted my brother and my sisters enough that they would not continue this dialogue
mm-hmm.
there. But I also knew we didn't have to have it so long in the car. So I said, yes. And so someone said, are you going to get married to this guy? She said, yes, we are getting engaged. And so my brother turned to me and he said, are you gay?
Yeah.
I would say instantaneously, as soon as I said yes, we hit one of the worst traffic jams in the history of the Garden State Parkway.
Of course.
And that 4 or 5 minute drive was about 48, 49 minutes.
Yeah.
And they were freaking out like, oh my God, you know, and it was the Day of Atonement. So there was that.
Yeah.
And so it was really,
it was
rough. And I told my parents pretty soon after that.
Mm-hmm.
I told my mom on the phone, which I don't, you know,
it's not ideal.
It's not ideal, especially if you're only 35, 40 minutes away.
Yeah.
But that was also another thing where it was the decision not to lie anymore. And I remember I was an RA and we had done a service project at the Children's Aid Society, maybe something like that.
Okay.
But it was an organization that Rosie O'Donnell volunteered with.
And
Rosie O'Donnell was there that day.
Mm.
And Rosie had come out at that point. And so I had said something about Rosie O'Donnell. My mom said something. And then I said something. And then I backed off it. And then, somehow, I can't remember the exact words. But she finally said, well, are you gay? And I said, yes. And the story turns out, I mean, she hung up and mm-hmm. on me and then she called my dad. And then it was like a series of events where she was really trying to get people to talk me out of it, but she didn't really want to have the conversation at that point. So if the next date was, well, you need to call your grandmother and tell her. So I called my grandmother and told her, and my grandma, I said, you know, Gran, I'm actually not coming home for this holiday because I'm gay. And she said, you're what? I said, I'm gay. You mean you're a fairy? And I said, well, yeah. And she didn't mean anything by that word.
Yeah,
and I had to say, well, yes, but no, but sure. And then I called my mom back. I told Gran and she said, okay, fine. Then you need to call the rabbi and tell him. So I said, fine.
Oh, boy.
So then I called the rabbi and they transferred me to his house.
Oh.
So I told the rabbi, and I wouldn't tell him who I was because my parents were big leaders in the temple. And and I just said, look, my parents are really struggling with this. And he said, well, I know my congregation and I know that no parents are as
lacking in understanding as you are portraying your parents to be. And I said, oh, yeah, well, my parents are Terry and Barry Schneck. And he said, oh, okay, I could see how that would be difficult. And I tell this, you know, it's difficult to even – it is more difficult for me to tell this story now because of anyone walking away with, oh, my God, your parents. But even my good friend Carly Adler, we talk about it all the time. Looking how far my parents have come. It's not even, my parents are where, there's no farther from my parents, I feel like, that they can go. My parents have been on this show a million times.
I know,
My dad walked out of that congregation when when the new rabbi said something bad about gay marriage. My dad got up and left. My parents are the parents that so many other parents come to.
Right.
For supporting their gay kids.
Yeah.
And I think that for a while that was really difficult for my parents to be in that position because it's not what they signed up for.
Yeah, they didn't ask for it.
But so, you know, it's hard. It's hard to tell that story because it really was not an easy coming out.
Right.
It was most certainly not an easy coming out. And I thank God for the family that I really was born into. You know, there's all the comments about that we as gay people can choose our families. Mm. But I feel like I was also born into a gay community. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like the choosing, I get nervous about that because it's like, does that mean you're choosing to be gay? And nobody's saying that.
No.
But I was born into this amazing New York City family. And we used to go to all the gay bars in the West Village and there was one. Oh, Nuts and Bolts. I couldn't remember the name. And we're not even going to go into that name. And it didn't make sense to me until like a year ago. But Nuts and Bolts were there all the time. And it was just this really close-knit family of people supporting each other.
Yeah.
And that was pretty integral for me. Although, again, we can do a whole nother show on this, on what does it mean that your gay family can be found in so many different places only where there's alcohol present, and that's a whole different piece, another show.
Yeah,
so those are some coming out stories. And we had all of these other news stories that we're not going to get to, but there's some crazy people saying some crazy things. Most of them are in the Grand Ole Party. You had the Georgia GOP chairwoman, Sue Evert. She told a newspaper that she opposes marriage for same-sex couples because straight people may pretend to be gay in order to marry and receive certain benefits.
What?
Yeah. She said, quote, there is no way that this is about equality. To me, it's all about a free ride. Sure, Sue. That's what it's about. So there was that. And then the last story that we're just going to touch on really quick is, did you see the Rutgers basketball story?
No.
Craziness.
No,
craziness.
What happened?
So the Rutgers basketball coach was yelling gay slurs at his players to motivate
them.
And there, Rutgers is saying he has been reprimanded and punished. The guy should be fired.
He should be fired.
And kudos to Governor Chris Christie in my home state of New Jersey who supports him being fired.
Good. That's good.
Come on.
That's just unacceptable.
I just tweeted about this, so I'm actually using the Twitter.
Oh, the
Not
Twitter.
Really. I'm trying. I did tweet. But I said, this guy, he should be fired.
He should be fired. That's it's totally unacceptable.
So if you want to follow us on Twitter and read the tweets that I do every 9 or 10 days, you can just type in This Show Is So Gay on Twitter and follow us there. Like us on Facebook. Just type in This Show Is So Gay. Go to our webpage, thisshowisogay.com. And, of course, send us an email. We would love to hear your coming out stories. We would love to read snippets of your coming out stories on the air if you want us to. So send those emails on over to jody@thisshowisogay.com. And we will get those. And that's pretty much all we have time for on this week's show. I feel like we came out.
We did.
It's a process.
Yes, it is.
It's a process.
Ongoing.
Get out there, folks. Go support someone else who's coming out. They might not be ready, and that's okay. We don't want anyone to come out when they're not ready. They're real emotional. There can be financial. I well know. There can be financial, emotional repercussions to that. And so we do not support. I'm speaking for me and Jody. We do not support the whole outing people or really pushing people to come out when they're not ready, because that's not healthy. But do what you can to support the voices of your LGBT brothers and sisters wherever they are in the coming out process. And of course, while you're supporting everybody, remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?